listening to LawPod UK from the creators of the UK Human Rights Blog. It's a podcast that discusses developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. LawPod UK is produced by the barristers at 1 Crown Office Row and is presented by Rosalind English.
In a recent case against Google, the High Court considered whether the search engine should be required to delist links in its search results about the spent historic convictions of two businessmen under what has become to be known as the right to be forgotten. Dominic Ruck-Keen has written up the decision for the Human Rights Blog and is here to tell us more about it. He's done the hard work for us, as Mr. Justice Warby's judgment runs to 280 paragraphs. Dominic, first, can you explain how this right to be forgotten came about and some of the misconceptions that have grown up around it?
Yes, Rosalind. Well, I mean, in origin, the right to be forgotten, as it's come to be known, was really in the 2014 decision of the CJEU, so the EU court, in Google Spain, where the Data Protection Directive and the European Data Protection Directive, which was is the underpinner of our own Data Protection Act, and also the European Charter of Fundamental Rights, created a qualified right to be forgotten. And what the judge in this case, how he summarised Google Spain, was really that if someone makes what's called a delisting request, that where a search engine still has links when on the search results to web pages, where the results appear to be inadequate or irrelevant or no longer relevant or excessive in relation to the purposes of processing, so data processing carried out by the operator of the search engine, then you could make a delisting request. And why it's called a right to be forgotten is essentially it is an individual saying, well, if someone Googles me and you end up with links to pages and those links, i.e. the search results, put me in a light which I regard as unfavourable because those results are out of date or whatever other reason, then those links should be removed. So in a sense, that's why it's become known as the right to be forgotten. And the key element, as was made or highlighted in this case, was that it's not an argument that you can remove individual web pages, for example, a Telegraph website article on yourself. You don't have that right, but what you are able to argue is that web page should not be linked to from a search engine.
So in this case, what precisely were these two men arguing?
These were two individuals, both of whom who had been in the past convicted in the UK of criminal offences, various criminal offences, but their convictions were now spent for the purposes of English criminal law, and that they therefore argued that articles and web pages referring to their previous spent historic convictions should no longer be linked to by Google. So with respect to the right to be forgotten, what they were actually saying, as the judge said, was they were asking for a right not to be remembered inaccurately, and that therefore accurate information about them could be removed from the search engine or from the search results shown up by Google.
This right to be forgotten for which they were arguing involved a great deal of law, not only the right to privacy under the European Convention and the data protection regulations. Could you give us some of the general legal background?
Yes, well, I mean, this was a case that brought in a number of the key elements now of data protection law. It was decided before the GDPR comes into force in the UK. But I suspect that it had it been after the GDPR had come in, or sorry, that the General Data Protection Regulation had come into force, I suspect it would have been decided in the same way. But from the data protection side, the key law that was being considered was that the EU Data Protection Directive and also our own Data Protection Act, and also a 2004, the House of Lords decision in Campbell, where there was the common law right to protection against the misuse of private information, that those were all being considered, together with the Article 8 right to private and family life. And lastly, of course, the criminal side in the Rehabilitation of Offenders Act, under which certain convictions, as I say, become spent. But really here, the key legal arguments turned more on the data protection side than on the criminal law was clear. It was clear that it was spent. Google attempted to argue that they were acting effectively as a journalist, and that was really why the sort of Data Protection Act came into it. Because under Data Protection Act, Google was trying to argue that it would be entitled to rely on the journalism exemption under the Data Protection Act if it was found to have had any, or to be maintaining any inaccurate or out-of-date information, or keeping it for longer than necessary. Because, of course, Google is in a sort of double-hatted role where it, for the purpose of data protection, where it is both a data controller, because it does hold information itself, but also in some ways it's a sort of facilitator to enable people to find data that's held by other data controllers. And Google really was trying to argue that it should be able to be portrayed as a journalist. But the judge wasn't having a vast amount of patience with that.
He decided against Google and for one of the claimants, but not against the other. Why was that?
Well, I mean, I think that's the interesting and possibly worrying element, really, to this judgment, was that the judge went into a pretty in-depth exploration of these two individuals. And by exploration, I mean he looked at their previous criminal convictions. He looked, without being able to refer to the detail in open court, he looked, in essence, at what they'd done, what they'd been convicted for, and what they had done since, in terms of both how they had sort of conducted their business lives, but also the degree to which they had sought to show remorse, and the degree to which they had attempted to reduce the impact of the convictions by trying to spin them in different ways or trying to explain them away. And as I say, it was a really a sort of root and branch look at these two individuals, as a result of which he concluded that one of them was someone who had continued to be a public role as a businessman, that he had continued to try and argue that he hadn't been guilty in the first place, and that therefore the information in question served the purpose of minimising the risk that he will continue to mislead the public in the future as he had in the past, and so therefore that delisting was not appropriate. Whereas the other individual, he was rather more sympathetic to, and he said that he had frankly acknowledged his guilt and expressed genuine remorse. There was no evidence of any risk of repetition, and his current business activities were in a field quite different from that in which he was operating in the past, and that therefore his past offending was little, if any, relevance to anyone's assessment of his suitability to engage in relevant business activity now or in the future. So there was no real need for anyone to be warned about that activity. So it really, as I say, what he was doing is he was looking at these two individuals and making his own judgment and assessment about how important it was for members of the general public or specifically people who might want to have business dealings with these two individuals, how important it was for them to still be able to access, through the medium of Google, information about these two individuals' previous business dealings and the convictions that had resulted out of them.
You said yourself that this is quite a moral judgment, and I'm interested to see that one of the commentators on your post raised an interesting point, a similar one. He said, and I quote, "Obviously it's not possible to know the original facts, but I'm troubled by the relevance of remorse. I think it has to be accepted that the criminal justice system is not perfect, and sometimes people are convicted for crimes of which they're factually innocent. Any ex-convict is entitled to maintain his innocence. Such a claimant could not be expected to show any honest remorse. Indeed, such a claimant would have all the more compelling need to see his prior conviction vanish into the past." I have some sympathy with that comment, don't you?
Yes, I mean, I have to say that I think it does potentially draw the court into an inappropriate and really quite subjective assessment of a particular individual who has a spent conviction about the degree to which particular information is still relevant. I mean, having said that, of course, in the criminal courts, when sentencing, I mean, I'm not a criminal lawyer, but as far as I know, one of the elements that is taken into consideration when setting sentence is remorse. So I suppose to that extent, judges do feel that they're competent and qualified to be able to comment on and to assess a degree of remorse and to assess risk posed by a particular individual. But I think it is perhaps, if nothing else, it's perhaps a slightly unfortunate importing of ideas from criminal law into what is a civil right, and one that to be forgotten in shorthand.
Generally, Dominic, what implications will this judgment have for search engines or indeed any data holders in the future? Is this a very important step?
Well, I think you could take a narrow and a wider view. I mean, I think the narrow view would be that this was a particular... The issue of individuals with spent convictions is a particular niche, as it were, of people who might be applying for delisting. And it may be that search engines would look more favourably on delisting requests from them because it's going to be easier for them just to agree to do it in this case rather than risk another unfavourable judgment, which might be even wider and be less narrowly based on the fact that there were spent convictions. Because I think while, as I say, there's a possible wider view that this is, you know, quite a significant case for delisting generally and the sort of checklist of things which you look at, I think, you know, the ratio of the case and the case was based upon spent convictions, and I think therefore its more general relevance is perhaps limited. How likely is it for someone to be able to get delisting? I think it probably is relatively narrowly confined to people who have spent convictions, but I think it will increase the pressure on search engines, in particular because it was deemed that they couldn't claim an exemption under the Data Protection Act for having inaccurate or out-of-date information or keeping it for longer than it was necessary because they were journalists.
I think that pretty much covers the case and its implications. Thank you very much, Dominic. Hope to hear you on the podcast again soon.
Thank you very much, Rosalind.
LawPod UK is presented by Rosalind English and produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and recommend us to a friend.